welcome to the Semiconductor Insiders Podcast Series. The goal of this podcast is to bring semiconductor experts together to get to the truth about the matter at hand. We'll get right to the point and not exceed 30 minutes of your time. If you have a topic you would like us to cover, please post it on semiwiki.com and we'll get right to it.
My guest today is Dr. Elad Alon, CEO and co-founder of Blue Cheetah Analog Design. He's also an adjunct professor at UC Berkeley. Good morning, Elad, and welcome to the podcast.
Good morning. Thanks so much for having me.
So the first question we always ask is, what first brought you to semiconductors? Hopefully you have some type of interesting story.
Yeah, so I definitely have an interesting story in a few different respects. So my father is an electrical engineer. My mother was a computer scientist. In fact, even farther beyond that, I've got a few more electrical engineers in the family. So, in some senses, I guess I was, fated to go in this direction. But the sort of the more interesting part of the story, perhaps, is that as a freshman at Stanford, which is where I did my undergraduate work, I kind of initially went in thinking that I'd do some sort of, computer systems engineering, which was basically a mix between the two. And one of the sort of people who was on staff in the dorm that I was in, which was, it was basically an all freshman dorm, but they had a few of the upperclassmen that were there, for various advising purposes. And he was an electrical engineer, a smart guy. And so I kind of went to him, like, oh, hey, I'm thinking of doing this, computer systems thing. He's like, oh, no, don't do that. Cause you don't really get a chance to, sort of go deeply enough into either side of things. And so then, according to him, and, I kind of agree, generally speaking, with the principle of what he said, even 20, 25 years later now, according to him, he was basically, oh, well, if you go and you do computer science, it's really hard to go back and do hardware. But, if you do hardware, it's always easy to go back and do programming. So like, okay, well, freshman, 17, 18 years old, like, yeah, sounds reasonable to me. So sure, why not? So that kind of, set me off in the path of doing electrical engineering. Given that prior background, initially I thought I was going to be sort of a computer architect. And similar type of story where, I kind of went to an advisor at some point and I just sort of asked, oh, hey, these kind of couple of different classes I'm thinking of. And one I think was, sort of a more advanced logic design course. And the other one was, the VLSI class. And, my advisor, at the time, basically said, oh, yeah, it's really important to know how things are built because, that just influences everything. So you should go take this VLSI class. So I took that and, basically never looked back in terms of, getting farther and farther into semiconductor, circuit design in particular, more even analog mixed signal over the, the majority of my career. So that's kind of how I ended up where I did.
Yeah. Similar. I have a computer science degree, but all the jobs were in hardware engineering back in the 80s. And, there was probably 10 hardware guys for one software person. And now it's probably the other way around or maybe even more.
Yep.
Yeah. So did you say your father was also in semiconductors?
Yeah, so my father was not only an electrical engineer, he was indeed in semiconductors. He actually worked at Intel, many years ago. He was one of the people working on 286. He went on the entrepreneurial path, sort of shortly thereafter, ended up actually mostly in software. It's definitely been in the blood.
That's a great story. So it wasn't so long ago that chip companies were considered not good investments by the VC community. This is when they, all went all into software, right? Facebook and Twitter and such. But now custom chips are everywhere. So and there's a lot of VC being pumped into the fabless market specifically. So what's changed?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's definitely, I'd say over the last, call it 4 or 5 years or so, has really been very much of a renaissance. And I think that's really been driven by kind of a couple of factors. One is just that, if you go and you look at sort of all of the top companies from a market cap perspective in technology, which, again, these days tends to also be kind of top companies from market cap perspective, period. Almost every single one of them is actually building their own custom silicon these days. And I think that's just been driven by the realization that sort of collectively, quote unquote, everyone has had, which is that, as these vertical companies sort of demonstrate, they tend to know their own workloads, their own applications, their own requirements, and, sort of the things that will impact their user experiences, most strongly. And so they're the ones that tend to be in the best position to figure out what custom silicon they can build or custom hardware really overall, with silicon being a key piece of that would actually sort of, have the most noticeable impact. So the, on the one hand, there's been sort of, you know, this big kind of just resurgence amongst the large companies that are really driving, you know, sort of these essentially sort of working custom chips forward. And then on the other hand, you know, to be sort of, you know, frank, you know, the whole AI wave has really just driven a lot of people who have realized that, okay, yeah, you know, it's very difficult to meet all the requirements that everyone has, you know, sort of sticking with, you know, typical processor and, you know, system partitioning. So that's just driven a lot of kind of energy and excitement around, you know, custom hardware specifically for those types of applications. And so now, you know, there's just, it's become, you know, much more standard and even, let's say almost, you know, the meme that one would tell of, oh yeah, you know, I'm yet another AI accelerator startup, right? You know, no knock on any of my friends and colleagues that are doing those things, but, you know, that has very much driven a lot of the effort and investment or reinvestment, I would say, in this space. Of just, you know, sort of realizing that, yeah, actually, you know, these applications do demand exactly that kind of expertise. And, you know, it's now become, in some senses, cool again to actually be working on custom chips.
Yeah, no, I agree completely, especially about the AI stuff. You know, I see it. You know, I've also seen a lot of systems companies on my website, SemiWiki, looking at tools and IP. And so the systems companies, and, you know, this is how everything started when I started in the 80s, is the systems companies did their own chips. And then, you know, we went fabless and we went IDMs and fabless and stuff. But I see a lot of systems companies back doing their chips. So I think it's a whole, you know, circle of life here. But I've never seen more excitement in the fabless industry than versus the very beginning, but than now. And AI definitely is behind that. But, you know, with the proliferation of custom chips, has designing them gotten any easier? I mean, do you have a sufficient supply of chip designers?
Yeah, no, and that's a great question. And you'd sort of imagine that, you know, with all the excitement and everything like that, that, you know, it'd be much easier to really get these things done. And I think, unfortunately, you know, that's just, you know, really has not been the case, right? The costs of, you know, building in these latest and greatest process technologies, at least if you follow, you know, sort of the trajectory that has been followed for most of the last couple decades, you know, has definitely not been, you know, sort of the one that would show you that you really could do much, much more than you did in the past. And so I think there's kind of two aspects to that. One is, you know, obviously just the actual design efficiency and productivity. And the other is just, you know, sort of the supply of the designers, right? It's at the end of the day, that's what tells you how much work the industry as a whole can get done. And this is not to say that there haven't been tremendous improvements in many ways, right? You know, the EDA companies and suppliers have done a lot of work. Obviously, you know, the IP companies and everything out there are doing, you know, everything they can to push these things forward. But it's definitely not, you know, sort of gotten noticeably easier relative to, I think, you know, both the complexity of the things that people are putting together, as well as obviously just as we just talked about, right, there's this tremendous increase in demand that's happening now. So that ratio, I think, overall has definitely, you know, not gotten easier. And on the supply side of things, you know, unfortunately, you know, or just, you know, really kind of stating, I think, how things generally are, you know, there is definitely a lot of excitement and a lot of, you know, sort of pull in the semiconductor industry. But to harken back a little bit, you know, to my own story, you know, it's just, it's a lot more natural for people kind of graduating college, you know, over, let's say, the last decade or so, to be very familiar with and exposed to software and see that, you know, this is a very sort of easy and good path to a, well, you know, high paying job than it is even relative to hardware, even compared to, you know, kind of today. And this is, again, you know, no statement on relative value or anything, but, you know, generally speaking, to kind of, you know, get yourself trained to a level where you can make, you know, strong contributions in, you know, sort of modern hardware, you know, sort of companies, you know, it tends to be a higher barrier. You know, and some of that is just associated with, you know, let's say relative risk levels of, you know, what it takes to like tape out a 5, 7, 3 nanometer chip, you know, something like this. And, you know, how many zeros are in the check you write to kind of do anything there, you know, as opposed to obviously if there's a software thing, not to say there isn't, you know, enormous revenues and everything behind that, but fixes tend to be, you know, sort of more straightforward. So, you know, the combination of those two really just says that, yeah, that there's just not a whole lot of, you know, there's not an increasing supply by any stretch. You know, it's you know, unfortunately at best flat. You know, the tools and, you know, everything else to kind of improve the productivity. Again, it's not that there aren't improvements, just relative to the demand is really not moving forward. And let's say kind of closest, you know, nearest to my own heart, if you look in the analog mixed signal space in particular, I think, unfortunately, we just really have not made, you know, very, very significant strides relative to, approximately speaking, the way people were doing the designs, you know, 30, 40 years ago. And again, it's not to say that people aren't doing more and more impressive stuff and, you know, making progress, but, you know, the gap is definitely very much there and is, you know, is probably the largest gap that exists in kind of this whole overall design ecosystem in the semiconductor space.
Yeah, you know, when I started, it was all digital, right? Everybody was doing digital stuff, but now the analog mixed signal stuff is critical. So, but you know, the chip shortages helped us. Everybody knows, you know, chips, semiconductors. You know, everybody wants to, you know, talk about it now. I mean, people that I know who didn't even realize I was in the semiconductor industry say, "Hey, Dan, how about that chip shortage?" And I'm like, "Well, I kind of work in that industry, you know," but how do you believe the needs of the industry will be met moving forward?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. And, you know, obviously, I think there will certainly be continued progress in sort of, you know, the more traditional sort of approaches and directions of, you know, obviously improving the EDA tools, improving the methodologies and so on and so forth. And, you know, and I do indeed hope that you know, as you said, the current trends will really sort of make the human side of the equation, you know, turn back up. But I think, you know, the ratios there, I think, are sort of high enough that I believe that we really, really have to take a more structural approach to kind of address these kinds of things. And so in particular, you know, a direction that, you know, we very much believe is going to end up happening is that, you know, people are going to have to start doing a lot more heavy kind of quote unquote reuse than has been done in the past. And what I mean by that is that, you know, kind of the IP market in particular in the analog mixed signal space has been, you know, a good, healthy market, you know, not tremendously large, but definitely has been growing at a very healthy pace over the last few years. And we really see that essentially the centralization that implies in terms of, you know, where the expertise is and, you know, sort of where the sort of sets of companies that sort of know very well how to do these things. We really believe that essentially kind of the market structure there will become more horizontalized, in the sense of, you know, there'll be a probably reasonably small set of companies that, you know, will have a lot of the leading experts in various forms of the analog mixed signal IP and building blocks that many people want to use. And that essentially, you know, that we're going to have to figure out a way of essentially leveraging that expertise and reapplying it in all these different new scenarios that everyone is talking about, so that, you know, we don't essentially have to kind of build these, you know, huge design teams in every single individual, you know, systems or semiconductor or, you know, whichever company that it is. So in other words, essentially, I think this is all just going to come back to, you know, we need to essentially kind of, you know, centralize our efforts as much as we can, because it doesn't really look like the ratios are going to be closed, you know, any other way, right? We just need to be much better about kind of leveraging the people and the essentially the resources and the best known approaches that we've got already.
Right. So you mentioned horizontal market for IC design. So what are the key challenges that need to be addressed here?
Yeah, no, and there are definitely a number of them, but I believe the most important one is really that, you know, these days, what really, I think, drives very strongly for having kind of most of these companies that do semiconductor design ending up having, you know, their own fairly significant design teams, you know, again, specifically in the analog mixed signal space, although this is true more broadly as well, is simply the fact that whenever you start building, you know, some form of custom chip, it's almost always the case that, you know, some degree of the thing that you're trying to do bleeds into the individual subcomponents and the building blocks that you're trying to realize. I mean, this is, again, just particularly true in many of the analog mixed signal things where, you know, you're just dealing with the real world, right? So, like, you know, even like having a very different power level that you're dealing with in some like voltage regulator or something, right? Like, I could just drive you to build the thing in a very different way. And so the point is that you basically, as a company that wants to then deliver solutions that are based on these things, you basically need people that know, given the end application that you're trying to realize, what it is that you need to customize, right? You know, what things would actually have the most impact, would then need to know how to actually go and realize that customization. And then finally, obviously, actually execute it as well. And, you know, for better or for worse, you know, these days we spend a lot of our engineering resources and human effort really on the execution piece, even in the cases where we know pretty well the what and the how. And so that just really means that there's, you know, it's hard to kind of reuse things, you know, very effectively, because again, you need all these people to kind of actually execute the stuff that you yourself figure out needs to be done. And so that's, I think, one of the key sort of, you know, reasons why this type of structure has not, you know, already emerged despite, you know, many of the trends that we've been talking about.
All right, so let's talk about chiplets. What are chiplets to you, and why do you believe they will help catalyze the trends that we've been talking about here?
Yeah, so the key idea with chiplets is that basically, rather than building everything in a single large monolithic SoC, we can actually break things up and attempt to match the needs of the particular functionality that we're working with to the characteristics of the specific process technology we might build it. And I'm describing it in this way because, initially speaking, a lot of these considerations were driven by essentially cost of saying that, okay, look, in my core processing functionality, I really need the absolute latest and greatest process technology because that's the way that I can actually hit the performance and density and so on and so forth that I need. But there's all kinds of other peripheral things, you know, typically IOs or, you know, memory interfaces or things of this nature, where being in the latest, greatest in process technology, you know, not only may not help, it may be a hindrance. And so it may not, you know, just economically make sense to actually pay the additional cost that it would take me to go and build that in monolithically with the original die. Or alternatively, I may just be trying to do something that, you know, that basically won't fit even into a single reticle size die on the latest and greatest process technology. So I may want to actually break things, you know, sort of quote unquote break things up in the sense of be able to expand the capabilities beyond that. Now, most of the discussion that I've, you know, given so far has been about kind of the economics of this. But in reality, this also really kind of changes the way that sort of this whole kind of thing can operate, in that, you know, now if there really is sort of a broader, more open chiplet ecosystem, then one can imagine that you could essentially go and say, all right, look, I'm, you know, the world's leading expert in whatever it is, you know, AI accelerator or, you know, let's say network processing or whatever it happens to be. And essentially that means that the barrier to entry to building a viable product in the space, you know, if I really can just build this narrow targeted chiplet and I can ensure that it interoperates with, you know, any other chiplets that the people may be building in this overall ecosystem, that just allows me to actually go and, you know, do a much more specialized and a much more customized design that really leverages my own best expertise without being quote unquote burdened by having to integrate a number of other, you know, sort of functions or building blocks or things like that may or may not really be where it is that I'm trying to make a competitive differentiation on. So in the context of what we've been discussing previously of, you know, what is this going to do and why does this kind of drive a more, let's say, horizontalized design market, again, particularly in the analog mixed-signal space, is I think this does two things. One is that it further increases the need to have custom, essentially, designs, because now, again, sort of a key tenet of all this is that you really can do much more, let's say, individualized and customized chiplets than you probably could as larger SoCs when that was the dominant force driving the market. And B, that, you know, obviously, hopefully this is going to drive many more people to actually be sort of participating in this design, you know, in this kind of this overall semiconductor design ecosystem. But, you know, as we talked about before, at least at the moment, you know, it doesn't seem like there's going to be an exponential trend on, you know, the number of people that will have the appropriate expertise, again, particularly in the analog and signal space, to meet all these needs. So I think that very much is going to just drive even further the need to have essentially, you know, sort of companies and, you know, sort of organizations out there that can meet the needs of all these customized chips and chiplets that people are building, but do so in a sort of dramatically more efficient manner than they have been able to so far.
Right. Now, I agree completely. You know, to me, chiplets definitely is a design enablement. So it's cost and everything. But, you know, getting these huge dies to yield at these new, the leading edge processes is difficult. So, you know, chiplets is also a big time to market and time to yield. You know, it's a big deal. And it's very important. So let's finish this up. Tell us more about Blue Cheetah. You know, what brought you to Blue Cheetah, your co-founder? And how does this all fit into the story that we've heard?
Yeah, absolutely. So as you mentioned, I was one of the co-founders of Blue Cheetah. You know, prior to that, I was on the faculty at UC Berkeley for a number of years, almost about 15, as you said. I'm still continuing as an adjunct there, but, you know, it's full time. And basically, Blue Cheetah was sort of founded out of research that was done you know, with me primarily as the PI, but with a number of my colleagues and collaborators, and also with a very generous sponsorship from a number of organizations, particularly from a large program at DARPA, where it was driven by many of the same kind of considerations we're talking about here, of just the realization that, you know, we must figure out a way to just substantially improve the overall efficiency that we get from our designs if we have any hope of essentially meeting all the requirements and all the specializations and, you know, customizations that we're talking about. And so the primary realization and approach that we pursued is that we basically have to figure out how to much more efficiently reuse not just the results of our design processes, but our design processes themselves. And so the term that we like to refer to this as, and we're by no means sort of the first or the ones to coin it, but is basically this idea of using generators, where what a generator is essentially capturing programmatically the approach that we as designers take to realize and build any particular design that they may be asked of us. And so the idea with Lucido is very much exactly what we've been talking about, in that, you know, once we've got a set of people that have expertise in particular areas and know very well how to build particular types of blocks, again, particularly in the analog mixed signal space, then we can get those, you know, actually written down in the form of executable programs, Python in our particular case, so that then next time around, when somebody comes and says, oh, actually, you know, I don't want this particular exact, you know, sort of design you built before, but I want a variant of it that fits into the approach that we already knew how to do, then we can essentially re-execute that code rather than essentially, you know, forcing the human designers and in particular the large design team that most people carry to go and actually deliver that design to a customer. So we think this is really kind of the key to unlocking this, you know, horizontalized, you know, sort of analog mixed signal design market, right? In that, you know, we can then really leverage the expertise and the knowledge that we have of, you know, a relatively speaking, you know, sort of smaller organization or smaller set of people, but to really kind of serve all these differing needs by essentially reusing the approaches that everyone takes. Now, the particular market that we're going after first to really essentially commercialize and essentially drive the first entry point into, you know, kind of causing this change in the market structure to occur is actually specifically in the chiplet interface space. Because basically everything that we said about kind of, let's say, simplification and, you know, design specialization and so on and so forth, right, it's all true as long as you're able to make sure that you can actually interface with any other chiplet that's there. And obviously, you know, getting those interfaces right, getting them to have, you know, the very good energy efficiency you need, the very good bandwidth density that you need, obviously the extremely high, you know, robustness that you need, right? These are all kind of core analog mixed signal problems that, you know, we at Lucido just happen to have a lot of expertise in. And so some of the, essentially the first production generators that we're building, and the first, you know, therefore essentially design products that we're delivering out of those are focusing in that space.
Great explanation. You know, I've worked with Lucido now. They're on semiwiki.com, so you can see information about the company there. And the website is bcanalog.com. So thank you very much for your time, Elad. And thank you, everybody, for tuning in to the Semiconductor Insiders podcast series. And have a good day.
Thank you very much, Dan, for having me, and thank you all for listening.
That concludes our podcast. Thank you all for listening, and have a great day.